not have been factored in. But if all the changes have been handed in from political parties, we won't have a problem. Because every political party handed in those comments. Honourable Albert, did you say no?
No, ma'am. I actually haven't had much time to look at it, but I will go through it with you as we proceed today. Unfortunately, I was moving home, so I was just upside down the last 2 days.
Now, what I'm trying to propose before we adopt the agenda is that is it not possible then for you to draft that at some point in the morning, you see, because we are adopting today. We should have adopted it last week. And they want to clean up the report with the inclusion. So the proposal made by Mr. Herman is that they be given space an hour after lunch to do that. Do you think that would be enough space for you to include it before 3? Yes. Okay, then that is the adoption we'll go with. So members, in that case, what we'll do is we'll have a short lunch break. You'll then go on to the house at 2, and we... Is it 3 today? Well, then we'll have a late lunch and then come back again at 4:30. Those are the changes that I do want to implement there. All right, so this idea of deliberations until the bitter end, lunch will shift to 2:15. From 2:15, sorry, 2:30, yeah, 2:15, and then you'll have go on to the house at 2:00, and then you will return here at 4:30. Honourable Harris?
So I was hoping we wouldn't shift lunch before you saw my hand up. I have another meeting at 12:30, which I can't miss. So if you have me at lunch, I'll just have to step out and you'll have to excuse me, but I will be going from 12:30. And still, it goes until the house.
On the radar screen for the committee per se, but we do want regular reports. I know that from time to time there's going to be a short written one pager, and I assume that would come from Ms. Hurling or Mr. Herman. Is that correct? Yes. So it's really a 5-minute report back as to the status of where you are on some of the challenges.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yes, I agree. The working group has met, I think, twice now, and has looked at a few issues. But I want to refer to we are saying that the gambling areas must be demarcated, clearly demarcated, so that you separate the gambling area from, for instance, an entertainment area or area that is generally accessible to the public. But that also will assist in preventing underage access to gambling areas. The next issue was about, we were saying there possibly is a need for amending. There will be a need for amending the gambling legislation. That includes lotteries as well, lottery legislation. But also we did consider whether it would be possible to integrate lottery into gambling, because lottery is in fact gambling, and there might not be a need to separate it, but that's an area that needs to be teased out further. On some specific issues, and that's the second area, we want to propose to the committee that we maintain the limit on gambling licenses. Currently they are 40, and we think there is no need to increase the number of licenses. We are not clear, and this is the second issue on specifics, we are not clear as to what, how to deal with the Gauteng Northwest demarcation problem. Because in the course of the demarcation that is taking place, Northwest has lost out. We are aware that there are three licenses that, of the 40, there are three licenses that are still available. But we're not sure whether it would be fair to take one of them and give it to Northwest, because there are three other provinces that have not as yet used any gambling license. And that might be disadvantaging the three remaining provinces who are not yet having an appetite for gambling. We think that because the report of the commission suggests that cost raising is becoming less productive, we think that it does need modernization, and that's an area that needs to be looked into. That includes also bingo. We are informed that bingo is becoming technologically competitive as well, but we fear that allowing bingo to be modernized in that fashion might increase chances of illegal gambling. So that's one area that needs to be looked into a little closer. We propose that all gambling machines should be registered with a specific number at a central, national central registration center, so that you are able to monitor whether all forms of gambling are done within the legal parameters. And that should also assist the inspectors to do their work much more easier and effectively. However, we are not sure, we haven't even spoke about who is going to be responsible for that center if it does get established. Whether it should be the National Gambling Board or a new board altogether. The technical skills that are required as well is an issue that we might have to tease out, but we have also proposing that licenses should be renewed, gambling licenses should be renewed every 5 years. And there must be conditions attached to whether your license will be renewed or not. We suggest, for instance, that a person or the owner should not have been found engaged in illegal gambling during the 5 year period. We must consider also the social responsibility of those who own gambling facilities. And thirdly, consider support for local SMEs and cooperatives. But the list is not conclusive. It is open to further improvement. We also thought that it might be possible to increase the amount given out through the limited pay machines. It has been taxed at 2,500 rand over this, over a 10-year period. And there is a recommendation indeed from the Commission that amount should be increased because inflation has actually eroded the payout. Because we are not clear how they calculate those things, but we don't know whether we might just be making worse or attracting more habitual gambling if we do that. But we thought we must put that before the court. Those are issues that we have dealt with in the working group so far. We haven't done all the specific areas of gambling. The last thing that we propose is that we should do a visit to some of the gambling destinations. And the suggestion is that we go to Gauteng because that is where all sorts of gambling is taking place. Other provinces do have casinos and other things, but not all of them. It being the hub of economic activity, Gauteng seems to be the more attractive place to visit. So that, because some of us don't exactly know or understand these forms of gambling, so that we are able to advise the committee further. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable colleagues, this is just a status report. When I say justice, not the most suitable word, but rather it is a status report. It's not here for debate, per se. But what it is here for, if you feel that you want to raise an issue, I know that the working group has raised the point about, possible advisors, or what is it, the word that was chosen. I know, I don't want to use it, consultants, but experts or something like that. You know, this issue has been on the table for some time. Am I correct, Honourable Kutinde? The issue that it may be useful for us to begin to consider how long it takes to get such people on board. It doesn't take 2 weeks. Is it something you want the table to begin to look at or not?
Yes, Chairperson, yes, we might want to be assisted by experts, but I'm sure we'll alert the committee later.
All right. I think let's leave it there for the moment, and just perhaps with a little bit of our early warning issues, I think we need to get such advisors on board by the end of, well, not on board, to at least know that we are, who they may be and who we want to contact.
to put forward some of the names that, you know, people that could be used in this regard. So there we are, 2 week warning, as it were, on the matter. On the 13th, when we are back in committee again on another issue, we can look at it. That is the 13th of September. All right. That being the case, can we please move back to the... I'd like to thank you very much, Honourable Pavasa, you and your team. I see you're very earnest about sitting at Papa's 7, and that says a lot for that working group, that they do get themselves here, whether it's on trains or whatever, and get here quite early. Thank you very much. Who is on that team now? Is it still Smiler? Put your hands up. Honourable Kotzer, Honourable Kamala. So there's three of you. Oh, Honourable Kamala as well. Okay, so that's a well-balanced team. Is that all right, then? Can we do these moves?
Chair, if I just, you know, I just would like to add two fingers on what was just said now. I think what we also look at is, and I won't go into very much detail, but some of us touch on some of the incentives to assist the various sections of gambling that we also touch on, and that we also. Incentives, if I'm talking about incentives, I'm talking about like the low payout machines that needed to go from 2.5, from 2,500 to 3,000 or 4,000. I'm talking to, you know, incentives in that manner to come up with some sort of a proposal. And that that we broke up the gambling industry in certain sections, and that we've And that we started with the casinos, and tomorrow, Thursday, we will act, and then we did the low payout machines and bingo, and now tomorrow we will actually go into the horse racing industry and come up with that section. So we're actually taking section by section and taking up from that, and we're also looking at the report that was laid by the previous committee in 2009, also taking of those considerations that was put forward to the committee then, and linking it up with the commission's report. So is that, you know, just for notes. And yes, thanks.
Thank you. I think that's just a quick input there. Thank you very much, Honourable Fossey.
We also realize that just ourselves as a working committee, we don't understand some of these games or this thing, gambling, that we're talking about. We agreed that sometime we would need a day to go to Gauteng. Apparently, we all get that in Gauteng for a day. Please, Jay, please. Everything is in a Gauteng. You all get them there for a day just to spend the day, move around and see some of them. I think we thought that would also help us a lot.
Certainly, as I come from Gauteng, I would say the idea is that we do things more in the open so they're all a lot more visible. But anyway, I think they're operating everywhere, if you ask me. But I'm closing this. It was simply a status report. We've got the state advocate leaving at 10. And that's the reason I want to start on IP. Because I'm even trying to persuade him to stay for another 10 minutes and hope he will be disciplined at the next committee meeting. Honourable Van der Merwe, please.
Thank you, Chair. To be brief, because I do need Advocate Quetta to give us a run-through. We've met again in the working group on two occasions. We now have a new document, which is what we're calling IP13, and everybody has received that. It contains the redraft bill with the changes that have been effected since then due to the work that we've done so far. It contains also a number of passages in red and blue, and everybody should have that because from now on this is the document that is going to form the basis of our work. There were, at the last meeting on the 24th of August, 12 issues that we identified as needing decisions from this committee, and we added two to those, I believe, so there's 14. And then we were also waiting for outstanding replies from experts, and those relate to international compliance issues. Now, we have received that response. They relate to protection from abuse on page 32 of IP11, which was one of the issues that we were still waiting for them to email us about. That reply has not yet been forthcoming, and the question of the alternative dispute resolution has not yet been forthcoming. What I would like to ask is if we could ask Advocate Queta, who has been the person mainly drafting this, to point us to the areas where our original IP1 has now been changed to become our core document, the redraft. Because remember, Chair, we don't have amendments now. We simply change our original redraft. And I'd like to ask him to point to the areas where the changes have been made in line with the discussion between our drafters and the experts and queries and discussions that have taken place with our meeting. So if we can move straight to that, I'd appreciate it.
And Ms. Queta, if you could brief us quickly on these areas.
Thank you very much, Professor. The honourable member from the member did that share the red parts are the ones that reflect the new amendment. And the blue parts are the same data as you just that they will be included after our meeting yesterday. But the opportunity to have the red and the blue have the new amendment. Chair, before we start with the performance protection test, we have a new definition here that will be included. The definition of community protocol is new, and also the definition of derivative of indigenous performance. The definition of indigenous community chair has been amended as well. But the one which I was about is a new enhanced one chair that is properly reflecting what is intended. There's also a new definition of indigenous cultural expression of knowledge, definition of indigenous performance chair. What are the new definition? And then in the book of the Act itself, there is quote 8A on page 11. There is a new sub 2 that says that is ensuring that there is a separation between indigenous knowledge as is going to be regulated in terms of the bill and also the existing conventional intellectual property. Let's ensure the separation and ensure that there's no confusion between the two regarding the rights that may be held by any individual. And then, Chair, on page 13, we have 12HC sub 2. That is, it was in the IP 1, Chair, before, but now it has been enhanced a bit, Chair. And it really provides that a person may, or a person, national person, or a person, a social person, acting on behalf of a national community may submit for recorded purposes share to the register. And share, and it also includes the provision that if the applicant submits such an application, yes, that application has to include a community protocol. The community protocol is to have certain factors like the leadership structure, the details of the representative, and also the representative must have a written undertaking that he or she holds the right on behalf of the indigenous community. And this protocol must also be submitted and be kept with the register to ensure that there is always evidence that this person is holding this right of behalf of the community. This clause, Chair, is also contained in all the other acts, Chair, you note. And then the next important one is on page 16, clause 8G, sub 2 and 4. These provisions, Chair, they are in effect the transitional provisions that ensure that if a person currently has a right, an intellectual property right, that is holding, March, within 6 months after commencement of this act, and ensure that he or she informed the commission and also entered into a beneficial agreement with the community, so the community benefits at the end of the day. And also four, let's forward, they can share that if after the community, the commission of the act, a person acquired rights, a person has to have consent of the business community to share the beneficial agreement, also inform the commission. And then the next major amendment share is on page 18, sub paragraph G of sub clause 10 share. That's a new addition share to the exceptions wherein a person may use this indigenous knowledge share without consent of the holder of the right share. Like crime study, the new one of the added share is that if the person is going to use it for archiving and inventory and for non-commercial cultural heritage, that's a new petition for the exceptions so that the person may use this initial knowledge without obtaining consent. This is also building in the upper F to share. And also on page 19.83, this is the issue of legal definition share. Remember the IP1. There was an outright ban on legal representation on adjudication processes. Yeah. But now the top three shares included a provision that under certain circumstances, legal representation may be allowed. This also contained in all the other acts. Yeah. The next provision is 8L on page 21, international agreement compliance with those shares. Remember, Chair, there was a bit of a concern regarding the international agreement. The new amendment shares the fact that our country may enter into multinational agreements, international treaties, conventions, and other international agreements, and also empower our minister to recognize an indigenous community of another country. And that country that the minister is going to recognize will really have to be a specific country that our council has entered into an agreement with. So his record has been confined to a country that is a party state to the international agreement in South Africa. The project also continues the world as a legislature, this part of the we are now in the Copyright Act, that starts on page 23. Chair, there are also replications of, or unnecessary replications of definitions here as well. Like the definition of community protocol on page 24, page 25, derivative, indigenous work is a new amendment session. Indigenous community chair is a new and enhanced definition. And then share those are the new definitions, like indigenous cultural expressions of knowledge, indigenous work. And then on page 28, that's up to share on top of page 29, that reflects the separation, ensuring that the rights, the current intellectual property rights that people share are not going to be separated from the indigenous knowledge, the rights shared that will be held by in terms of this but also during the performance protection as if you note. And then Chair, on page 31, sub clause 7, the same provision that is contained in the performance protection as empowering any person, authority person, or person action of behalf of the indigenous community chair to submit to the register chair for papers of registration. The community protocol is also included here, Chair, that is going to be submitted, and also the decision undertaking by the indigenous community. It is, as I explained, Chair, in the Performance Protection Act, Chair. There is also support then, Chair, ensuring that any person that is intending to register indigenous knowledge, Chair, has to have complied with those three requirements in A, B, and C. That is on page 32, support danger, obtain prior consent and all those issues. And the next major amendment, Chair, for a person that is currently holding an intellectual property around, did not know the site share. The same as the personal protection share. So the replication is just from now on. And also on page 39, sub clause 7, paragraph G, the inclusion share of acceptable exceptions on using indigenous knowledge share with 100% of the owner. Copyright in this respect. And then on page 40, also a new session share on sub 3. Subclause 3A is a new insertion share. And then the next major one share is also on page 44. This provision share ensures that, or rather, gives the Indonesian community power to give the Indonesian community a representative, gives the community power to transfer that representation from that representative to any other person on the death of the judicial termination or even before that. Then on page 45 share is the issue of legal regulation, the replication share as well, because it is in the Profile Protection Act as well. And then on page 46 share and sub clause 4 of clause 38L is the issue of the appointing process that the minister must comply with before appointing members of the council. That should be noted in the cabinet and call for nomination and chair, and then the minister will then make the necessary appointments. And then share the next part is on page 50, chair. Compliance with international agreements is the same as the Personal Protection Act, wherein this was amended to ensure that the minister enters into an agreement with the council share, other than business community like ours. That is a replication share as well. And then now, share, can we enter into the Trademark Act on page 55. In the Trademark Act, share on page 56, again, the definition of community protocol. Same as the two previous Inspire Acts. It also renewed definition of derivative, which is a term for expression of knowledge. And on page 58 and 59, other new definitions that are going to enhance and create bigger certainty to your interpretation and meaning of the rules of the field. And then on page 60, clause 43A, sub clause 2, share the same provision that is contained in the other two principal acts. And then on page 64, share on top of page 64, part of sub clause 43D, share the same provision that is contained in the other acts, share. Allowing a person, a natural person, share or solicited person, acting on behalf of the community to submit to the register for purpose of registration, share. And then, share on page 5 is the issue of the community protocol that must be included with the application for registration of indigenous knowledge. It's also a repetition, share for the other two acts. The role of clause 5, our sub clause 5, and sub clause 6, and 5. And then share the next, on page 9, is the other replication share, reflecting the transitional arrangement share, in respect of all of the person who has acquired vice current before the condition of this act. That's the same as in the other principal act. And then on page 770 and 71, share is the issue of exceptions when person to or not to obtain prior consent for expression, or use acknowledge Chair, and proud of society, that also that mural for which G is in Hawaii. And the thing is, the other principle is page 72 and page 73, Chair, is the same thing. Page 72, chapter 2 is the one provision that is allowing the Constitutional Committee to transfer a representation to another representative as it may decide. Page 73, Chair, is that issue of legal representation is also contained in the other principle F. And then on page 24, subclause for the K, again, the issue of compliance with international agreements. It is the same, as I explained in the other two principal heads. And then, Chair, we are now going to enter into the Design Act, starting on page 27. You can see again on top of page 78, the National Community Protocol. Same as in the other three principal acts. And then the new definition derivative, indigenous design, the definition of indigenous design, indigenous community, all the new definitions here, definition of indigenous cultural expression or knowledge on page 80. Those are the new definitions. And then on page 82, clause 53A3. Same provision as in the other three principal acts, ensuring that there is no confusion between the rights in respect of the conventional intellectual property rights and also the indigenous knowledge. That three are the principal acts. And then on page 84, subclause 4, same as the other, as in the other acts here, the provision empowered a natural person or community person chair, or a person is on behalf of business community to submit to the register for purpose of registration or for indigenous knowledge. Then on page 85, chair, that goes fine, the issue of the community protocol that must be submitted together with the application for registration. It is also a replication of the other chapters here. And then the next major one, Chair, is on page 89, subclause 2, rather than the same in blue, Chair. This is still the constitutional arrangement, Chair, and the same as in the other municipal acts. For a person who has acquired rights before, even after the commencement of this act, and subclause 2 and 3. So on page 90, chapter 7, same new insertion chair, G, of the exception. And then on page 91, clause 53H, subclause 2, is the issue of permitting the business code to transfer a representation chair to any person. And then, chair, on page 92, subclause 3 of 53I. In the issue of legal representation, same as in the other principal acts. And then on page 93, 53K1 is the issue of compliance with international agreements, chapter 7, is also contained in the other three principal acts, as well as new sessions. I think, Chair, I have gone through all the principal acts and the relevant amendments, Chair. The other red part is just more of just the terms and new expressions shared to enhance the appeal. Thank you, Professor.
Advocate Quetta, thank you very much indeed. I just wanted to, for the benefit of our colleagues here, just inform them it's not as if the advocate will be disappearing for the entire day when he goes to the other committee. I meant to understand, Advocate Quetta, that you would be back at about 1, I don't know if I want, even before, meaning 12 or what?
I'm not sure, sir, but they just get you for 10 o'clock to 1 o'clock, but they may knock off the India, but I'll definitely be there.
Yes. We'll adjust the program accordingly, do you see, to accommodate that. That's what I'm just looking at. But we won't discuss that right at the moment. Suffice to say, we would then like to release you, because you would be here later on for further input. And thank you most sincerely. I really, when I look at this redraft, you know, well, what is it, the enhancement, as it were, and, you know, drawing up the bill again, as it were, it really is, without examining it, it certainly appears on the face of it to be a marked improvement. Thank you very much indeed. Of course, now we will have to go into it, but it will allow you to leave if you are at the moment. And then I know you will be returning to us. Thank you very much, Advocate Quetta. We're back to yourself, Honourable Vandermeer, on that particular issue.
Okay, thank you very much. What again we did yesterday was to look and confirm the 12+2, I call it like that, outstanding issues that need to come back to the committee. There may be others, but this list that we have compiled that most of you are aware of, because I listed them at last week's meeting. There are a number of issues that this committee has to take a formal decision on. But I would like to just get to the areas that we have referred to the experts on which we have had a response. Okay. One of the areas was the question number two on, oh no, sorry, number three on my list was a question that we put to Ms. Tsepo Shabangu around traditional performances and copyright, and whether the Copyright Act and its amendments in our bill do not actually address all the issues, and therefore we don't need the Performance Protection Act to be amended here. So that was a question on which we had a reply. However, Chair, I need your ruling on this. I would imagine that this is going to take some discussion, and it has been discussed by the working group. There is another matter which we have just last night received an opinion on, which I think we need Advocate Tabernado to talk to here, because none of us have studied it, and that is the question of, also given to Tsepo Shabangu, the question of compliance with international agreements. It's a matter on my list at number, can't see it right now. But anyway, it was on my list. She has now submitted something which is entitled IP15, and Adams is the law firm which is at the top. What she did was she referred this question to the South African Institute of Intellectual Property Law International Treaties Committee, so sort of a committee of the South African Institute, and they have done an opinion for us on our bill. So I thought I could ask with your permission for Advocate Fundamental to go through that for us, so that we have that amongst our documents too as we go through the outstanding.
Honourable Vandermeer, I mean, you've flagged about three of these, what you would call quite very serious issues that would just require quite a bit of further deliberation here. But I think let's take advantage of the advocates that are already here, and probably members, before we can deliberate, let's get these further input. So we're going to come over to Advocate Vandermeer. Thank you very much, certainly, Honourable Vandermeer.
Thank you, Jason. As I said, this was referred to the South African Institute of Intellectual Property Law International Treaties Committee. They met on the issue, and they filed the committee's report to us. I'm going to go through the report and get the conclusion in the end. I won't read out the full report. The committee picked up their mandate, and I think that is very important so that we know what their answer relates to. They say that their mandate was to comment on whether the relevant provision of the Traditional Knowledge Bill being Section 8L, 28N, 53L, fell foul of South Africa's international obligations in terms of conventions and agreements such as TRIPS. Now, these are the two sections that deal with international agreements in each of the amendments to the bills, and they read exactly the same. What they say is that they have made to the Statutory Advisory Committee on the bill as introduced, they have made a submission to this committee. That submission included a proposed section to be inserted into the bill. And this is what they say about that insertion. At the time, a proposal was made to Portfolio Committee that clause be inserted into the bill to be introduced into each act, into each IT Act, to provide for the Minister to extend the protection rights in certain circumstances to the nationals of other countries. Then these sections that were referred to this are all worded substantially in accordance with the proposal made to the Portfolio Committee. This means that these sections in fact constitute the solution to the potential problem. These sections aim to avoid the accusation that nationals of other countries would not be given the same treatment as nationals of South Africa. So, then they continue to say that in the committee, there was, however, one dissenting view. The dissenting view is, however, very technical, and it speaks to words within the specific treaty. And the committee has then considered this dissenting view, and has said that it is the view of the broader committee that this does not hold substance, and they disagree with that dissenting view. So the dissenting view, so apologies, they disagree with this dissenting view, which is based on the technical wording of the international treaty. And they set out why they disagree with that. And then I think the most important part for us is their conclusion, which reads, it would appear that protection rights of the traditional knowledge to the nationals of other countries on the basis of reciprocity, as is envisaged by these sections, would be substantial compliance with the principle of national treatment. In other words, what we have currently is that our international agreement, the query that was there, whether this bill complies with our obligations under those treaties, has been answered. This bill complies.
I do have this in front of us, am I correct with you? Did we all follow that? It was quite clear to members who aren't in the working group. It is important that you have a clear understanding and are able to follow this. It is, and now I see members who were not in the working group at the start, you see. Oh, you haven't looked at it either, this is the first time. Okay, so you haven't had the advantage either. So, in fact, it's the entire committee that we need to. I'm just going to give you a little bit of time to study that and then to pose any questions for clarification. Honourable Vanda Merva?
Yeah, I just want to remind us that we are getting, when we move on, the beginning the experts, I'm not sure if you mentioned in the introduction, only starting from 5 o'clock. If you recall, we invited them for 5 because of the arrival of the plane of one of them. So you know, anything we do up until now, we might have to refer to when they are there on different issues. But I just wanted to remind the committee of the 5 o'clock thing.
You will recall from last week about the late arrival of the expert. Well, one of the experts, who in fact has just kindly agreed to jump off a plane and come straight here from an overseas trip. So we really appreciate that. But what I am asking is, just initially, we were alerted to this, and I think for the most part, it certainly does seem to address a number of the issues, but we can't really make such a statement unless others are clear. If members would like to reserve their inquiry until later, they may. If they wish to pursue one or two inquiries now, they may also do so.
Chair, I would like to address the not condemnation of what we receive, but on the process of how we deal with it.
Going through that at the moment, you see. I just want this first dealt with because we are coming back.
I'm dealing with this. I was one of those who, in the working group, requested for this legal opinion because this is a crucial aspect. If we are breaching international law, we are in a no-go situation. And I'm very thankful that it has been given to us. Now, we are receiving this in what we all admit to be a very technical matter. And we all try to apply our mind to try to do the right thing. We have an opinion, which is a majority opinion with a dissenting view. The dissenting view is discarded because very technical and based on words. But law is very technical, and it's only exclusively based on words. Nothing but words and law. And it's words coming together, and that is what makes things legal or illegal. My personal difficulty in reading this is that it relies on the issue of reciprocity. An expert drew to me a differentiation between reciprocity on the one hand and national treatment on the other hand, and told me you can't fix you're going about with national treatment, which are not supposed to do by means of reciprocity, because that's what the act does.
Yeah.
I don't have the competence of dealing with the correctness of that view. That came from Owen Dean.
Yeah, so I'm going to stop you there because you see you are already going down to the 5 o'clock period.
Well, I'm trying to plan the 5 o'clock. I'm finishing the sentence.
Honourable Ambrosini, please. When it comes to this, the chairperson of the working group reminded the committee, but we were reminded last week that the experts would come at this time, we would meet them. What I thought you would just come in here is just one or two issues, having read it. You didn't have a chance to quickly go through.
I have read it.
Now, if you have the opportunity, thank you. We will then, on that matter, it will wait until 5. On
No,
I'm not recognizing you now.
You are reacting to something that I've not said, and I did not mean to say. I mean, this is absurd.
No,
you're cutting me off before I say something.
I am cutting you off.
And I have not said what I had to say.
If I had something to cut you off on your mic, I would.
This is abusive, Madam Chair. I protest. I record my absolute protest.
Right.
Absolute
we'll record that. But right now, the working group gave us, which I did allow to be communicated to you, certain realities. I thought we would address one or two issues, not to say who'd come in with what and that. We already have processes outlined. Honourable Harris has reminded us that he, in fact, was only just arrived last night. Again. And some members will require longer. So what we're going to do is purely deal not with technical issues here or processes, but any clarification that Advocate van der Merwe could possibly address, seeing as she made the input. Honourable Harris?
Deals with the dissenting view, particularly the one on page 3, where it limits the view that it's limited, the exceptions are limited to judicial and administrative procedures. If the advocate could point me to the place in this legal opinion where that dissenting view is overturned, because it sounds pretty convincing and yet it doesn't seem to be argued against.
Any other comment or clarification that's required at this point? No. Over to you, Advocate van der Merwe.
Thank you, Chair. The dissenting view is dealt with in the overturning of the dissenting view is dealt with in paragraph 8, where it says in response to this dissenting view. the committee make the following additional comments. And then they deal with the each of the arguments that were made in respect of the... And when I say that the dissenting view is technical, the dealing with the dissenting view also deals with the technical aspects thereof. In other words, for instance, where the exceptions is stated as dealing only with judicial and administrative procedures, they indicate, but fine, this is what you're saying, technically speaking, on the wording there, but you also need to make sure that your TRIPS Article 3, Paragraph 1 makes this entire obligation under Article 3 subject to the exceptions of Bern, Farris, and Rome, which then brings in their argument into play. And then they deal with the other two as well in that paragraph 8 that you mentioned.
So that's purely a clarification. Honourable Harris?
I mean, can I request that we get to see TRIPS Article 3, Paragraph 1, because that appears to be the critical explanation.
We'll put that on hold just for the moment so that it can be addressed. All right, Honourable Harris? That is not right here in this room. Okay. On that matter then, that we have got before us, if you wanted to add anything, you could advocate Stridham. Otherwise, we're going to move just for the moment. Right. We're then going to, on this issue, we've just had this flagged. Yes, Honourable Potsy?
Yeah, I think, as the committee had the advocate from the mayor phase, and maybe with some experts, in as far as the dissenting view and the technicality of it. I hear that the committee then rejected that, but I think them playing this role now with us, can they give us their view? Because I think we are the committee dealing with that now. It doesn't necessarily mean that we cannot go back to that. It is true that the committee then overturned that, but we would like, now that we're opening this thing up, to hear for them to give us their
We've received a legal opinion on the matter. This is from one of the experts as well. However, I think what we're saying is, here we have advocate Stratton Merva. The experts on these matters will be arriving at 5. So that's why I'm saying the Honourable Harris has also raised something else about the trip, you know, wanting to see that particular article. Fair enough. It's not going to be here right now. So some of the issues we will flag to take further, and then we can get on with a number of other issues. This isn't the only issue we've been asked to address at the moment. Now, I see Honourable Mandelova's hand up.
Okay, I wanted to propose a way forward on this. I agree with you, Chair, that people should be given the opportunity to study this document properly, and I'm suggesting that we leave this until we get to that section where we go clause by clause, because we still have our 12 issues, some of which we can take a decision on here. And we can try and get through some of those and then flag the ones that are still outstanding and then perhaps go to the beginning again and start with the clause by clause.
What I'm hoping, though, Honourable Vandermeer, is that every committee member receives the 12 issues. You know, in writing. I know you've reported on it. That's what I was inquiring about. And I'm not aware that they have, you see. So it makes it a little difficult, I suppose, just to have noted all of that immediately. Honourable Smaller.
You can just at some point indicate when the committee can maybe deliberate or bring up maybe an additional clarification on issues that was raised by advocate earlier on, because there's one or two things of clarification that I actually need around the ball, and I don't know if it might become a 12 plus 2 plus 1 issue or an issue that I just need further clarification on.
Yes, I think the point is, the one working
this issue, then it just waits for that for other issues. If we can't remember all 12 all at once, that's not going to help us. I'm sure we'll be getting that back in about 2 minutes. Right,
copies of that. Honourable Harris. I request that the committee staff distribute the this legal opinion in soft copy by email.
Yes, I'm sure that I just did want to say, from what I gather from Mr. Smuller, Honourable Smuller, he's looking to have some queries on the presentation details, so we can do that first before we get to our 12 issues.
But I think he also said perhaps one of the issues he wanted to deal with was already flagged, 5 or 12, but he couldn't remember. Let's just get that distributed first. A number of these issues, I think, are we may find will be addressed by the, what Advocate Quetta was addressing in any debate to some extent, and some of these issues we would want to certainly also discuss further while the experts are here ourselves. I'm just adding that. Right, so I suggest if we can, it was made quite clear to us, we had completed with the process, the preliminary process of getting to the end. We had raised further questions, etc., even on the basis of those changes that had been already made. And so we need to go back to the beginning with the changes. We now have the full redraft in front of us.
Mm-hmm.
We now need to go back to the beginning with that in mind. What we believe may require further support and assistance from the experts, knowing that this has already gone through there, we can still set that aside. So what I would like to do, Honourable Smuller, while taking into account what you have said already, is to be start at the beginning. If the issue that you've raised is right at the end and you suspect we may not get through it, then indicate that to me now.
Chairperson, my issue relates to the dispute resolutions within this, and it's only on that. And so at whatever time, now or later, but it's only on that.
You may recall that this is one of the areas that we're still waiting for experts opinion.
Can we just move on then from page one? We're not doing the consideration, all we're doing, some of you may have noted a list of these pages. For those who haven't noted the list, we are dealing simply with the red and the blue in particular. Some of you are back again for the first time, as it were, in a long while. Page 5. You should have both of your copies in front of you. You know, the one where you noted the queries you had raised earlier, and of course the response now to that query, so that we don't delay. Page 6. The definitions, which appear. Let me take you secondly take on the language first, please.
And I put a clarification in respect of the community protocol and the highlighted improved word establishes. So it says, means a protocol developed by an indigenous community that establishes the right. And I'm trying to understand what it is that it meant, because in other parts of the bill, the right that is established by means of registration or is protected as such. So it would seem as if the right comes into existence as defined through the protocol itself. So I'm trying to somebody can explain to me what it's named.
Madam Chair, as we've been doing all along, if we could get your permission that we sort of do musical chairs between us here on the musicians. The Honourable Mr. Andrew Sini is referring to the issue that we discussed, I think it was last week. Doesn't matter, period, is it by the principle of this. We will recall that it was pointed out that in terms of the current law, the four principal acts that we're dealing with, in order to seek the right to registration of an intellectual property right, you need to be either a natural or a juristic person. If you're not one of those two, you're simply not entitled to the right. And in relation to indigenous communities, we were grappling with the problem of saying that should the indigenous communities be compelled to form themselves into legal structures in the form of a juristic person, be it a company, be it a closed corporation, be it a cooperative, be it a trust, but in being sensitive to the indigenous communities and knowing full well that even though many of them might not be companies, or probably most of them might not be companies or close corporations, but that does not mean that they are not well structured as an indigenous community. You will recall that we refer, for instance, to a traditional council. There might be a traditional leader within that council. So it is almost like being derogatory in saying to the community that we would rather like you to be companies or juristic persons, as opposed to these well-established structures that have been in place for a long period of time. So, in response to your question, Mr. Andrew Sini, what we're trying to do with a protocol is almost compatible to a company resolution. The indigenous community, if they would apply for a right, they would be confronted by the registrar in saying to them, but is this right going to be conferred onto a natural person, or is it going to be conferred onto a juristic person? By producing the protocol, the indigenous community would be saying, we might not be a company, we might not be a juristic person, but here is a protocol or a resolution clearly setting out that I am here as the lawful representative of my indigenous community. This protocol, if we read the definition of the protocol and the other new sections in our redraft dealing with the protocol, that clearly says that that person is mandated by the indigenous community to seek registration of that right. But now, we do not want the right to rest in that person as a natural person. We want the right to rest in the indigenous community. That is why the bill clearly says that the protocol must make it clear that the person arriving with a protocol would not be the proprietor of the right in respect of which registration is sought. The right will be held by that person mentioned in the protocol, but on behalf of the indigenous community. That is the principle that we try to make here. Irrespective of the fact that the community might not be a juristic person in the technical sense of it.
Right. The advocate did indicate, but I'm not putting the hand down, just I recognize that this was discussed at length last week. Okay, it was one of those issues that was flagged for further pursuit in the working group. Do you still find it insufficient?
Yes.
That
no, I'm sorry. The advocate answered the question that I asked to him in committee, not the question that I asked you today. additional legal capacity that we discussed at great length. That's not the answer, that's not the question I've asked, and sorry for not being clear. My question hinges exclusively on the utilization of the word establishes and the relationship between the protocol and the RAFT. Reading these, because these things must speak for themselves, Madam Chair. These things don't speak with the benefit of things which have been discussed in the parliamentary committee. But reading it on the basis of the word employed, one gains a clear understanding that the nature and type of RAFT is established through the protocol. That's what it says. The question is that what it means?
Indigenous knowledge, and it belongs to us. So the protocol is what, as I understood it, came from Africa von Braun, and we can raise it with her when she comes, and I think that's the process we should do. It's a way of getting agreement in the community of who represents them without having to list every single person in the community and so on. And it's something that is used, as she mentioned, in the bioprospecting. The Harris Red will probably have an example of where else it might have been used. I haven't got that example, but perhaps Professor from Rawls, Dr. from Rawls has got that. So I think we need to flag that it's easy, we'll just do it when she arrives, because it was her point. The point I wanted to raise, Chair, is that you started at the beginning, but you didn't start with a preamble.
Yes, I know.
Okay, and I had, that was our number one on our list of 12, and basically I thought we had agreement in this committee that that one of the suggestions from the experts was that we include something in the preamble to indicate that sui generis legislation in this regard may in the future be required. And we agreed that we cannot do that because there's both a legal argument and all sorts of different arguments why not, but a preamble is unusual in the first place in an amendment bill, and secondly, it would not be appropriate in a preamble to bind to make any binding decisions about the future. So I thought we could just agree on that we don't expand the preamble as suggested by one of the experts for those reasons.
Which is why I asked Mr. Hermans just to check with you that I had overlooked the preamble as in several ways but not actually part of the legislation itself. So what we do need to do here, all of us have got this flagged, the key issues that have come out from the working group itself, and that was the very first issue. There was no point in backtracking once we had started on the community protocol. Suffice to say that community protocol has been flagged when the experts come. So we won't take further points on that right now. We're now going to get back to the preamble itself. We need to actually take a decision as a committee. We're not doing the consideration fair enough. At least we need to know where the committee agrees, not simply the working group. No, it's in committee here. Preamble is here. The concept of sui generis, you've got these points right there before you. And unless there is somebody who wishes to comment on this either way, we can then assume that the preamble stays as it is. Unless I see a hand now, we move. Honourable Albert, Honourable
Ambrosini. Madam Chair, as this act flows from our constitution, specifically section 1331, relating to culture, we must take our whole constitution as a document into account. And there's one other section in the constitution that talks about self-determination of the people, section 235. The WIPO draft treaties also talks about self-determination of people. And this, what we're trying to achieve here would be a form of internal self-determination. In other words, giving credence and rights to peoples within a country, within a state. So we're not talking about external self-determination where there's secession and all those type of things. And I think we must give acknowledgement to section 235 as well, to also make sure that we take the whole of the constitution into account. Thank you.
I'm just cognizant of the fact that this is not the principal legislation right here, but let's just leave that on the table at the moment. Honourable Ambrosini.
Madam Chairman, I believe in formal approaches, and I said that the preamble it's some loose language, doesn't need to be written with 50-50 given body's principles. But there are also conventions international body confirming this. I mean, this is not how law should be written. If there is such a document, one makes reference to it. The same way we make reference to a specific section of a specific constitution, which we know what it is. So if there are resolutions, as well as we take cognizance of resolution X, Y, Z from a specific body, which is Y for other bodies. I don't know what this international body is at. I mean, it could be the ILO for all we know. So this, I would like to have, either we know what we write or we or let's not write because it doesn't sound right.
Broad principle of protection of indigenous knowledge. I think that that was the principle. And I can't see that it causes us any harm. I take the point that it's maybe not necessary and it's maybe not done, but I can't see that it creates any harm, unless I can be persuaded otherwise. In terms of Section 235 of the Constitution on self-determination, I don't think that's what we're talking about at all. It's not about self-determination. I hear what Advocate Albert is saying about a community must define itself in as an Indigenous community. But what we're talking about is Indigenous knowledge here and the protection of that Indigenous knowledge. And we must never lose sight of that fact. And I thought that the preamble was there to show that in the principle of what we're trying to do.
So, this is the last hand I'm taking, Honourable Elvis.
I just want to say that the WIPO document spoke about self-determination in the context of Indigenous knowledge. The reason being, there's quite a logical base from where you come. You know, you can't have cultural goods that are protected without having a culture, and a culture comes from the people, so there's a whole connection. You cannot dissolve them from each other. And that's where I think I'm coming from. And it basically speaks to an eternal form of self-determination. So it's talking about giving people the right to stand up for their own cultural values, groups, and even trading values. That's what the film is all about. So it's not divisible from 235 as far as I'm concerned. Thank you.
I just state the point very clearly now. Let us note that the right. I'll just take it off. We keep the preamble, we keep a preamble. The purpose which Honorable Van der Merwe has sought just to amplify there has been the decision in 1994 that we would make our legislation more accessible. Part of that accessibility, the preamble purpose would be to assist in this regard. So that there it is, not required by law, but part of just trying to make things more accessible to communities themselves, the readers, not the lawyers. But so we move from there, but not while noting, Honourable Elvis, that your point, we'll perhaps take it for discussion outside and our political parties, this sort of thing, come back, it is not thrown off, it is here noted. We won't scrap things, it is not. About the only time I use that word scraps was when I throw it to the dog. But, maybe a few scraps off the table. But there we are. Let's just move on from that particular point then. I'm looking to points made by the working group as well. The preamble. The next issue was IP is standalone and will not affect IP law. It's another issue that came up. Now, when we go through here, we look through this, just noting again, we have already just touched on page 5 already in this regard. We've already discussed the 6, page 6, and just for the purpose of enabling us to get a better understanding, we've got Honourable Van der Merwe to just enlighten us on this point for the committee.
Okay, so this point refers to an inclusion that has been made under 8A and subsequent, now I'm looking at the lawyers in case I make a mistake, and subsequent clauses in the other amendments to the Principal Act. This relates to 8A sub 2. Nothing in the section, I'm talking about number 2 on the
page 11.
Yeah, page 11. Because you're going through our 12 points now. So nothing in the section contemplated in subsection 1 shall be construed as granting any right to any person respecting intellectual property which is not Indigenous knowledge but arise from Indigenous knowledge. So that was the insertion in order to take care of that query that was raised by the experts and it was debated by us. So now we have to decide whether we agree with that insertion, and the two advocates can point me to the other two or three portions where it occurs. In all the four amendments, it occurs as a record. Thank you.
All right, that was on
through page by page, or are we going through the 12 points?
I was under the impression that that was the next page until I realized it was page 11, Honorable Harris.
So we're going to...
So I'm saying just for the moment, let's deal with that. But we do have to go page by page, and we're on page 6 or 7. Right? But we are going to deal with that one now. It does relate to certain issues. You know, we've got the word indigenous earlier on, which people may want to go to, or page 7. Do you want to deal with that item there, 8A2? I don't want... look. Yeah,
The thing is that we have grouped the 12 issues in a way that does not necessarily occur in the bill, for obvious reasons, you know, because they occur all over the place, first of all. And second of all, they arose as a group of issues, which we sort of contracted into these 12 points. So if we're going through the 12 issues, we might find ourselves jumping around a little bit. I'm at your disposal. If, you know, some of the issues go across the whole bill, for example, you know, and so...
Make a suggestion. Because those of us who were not in the working group are not sure just on which pages these occur. We're not. We do need, for the purpose of processing this in a deliberation, to go page by page. So it may be pertinent for you, Honourable Mandemirva, to watch your number 2 and 3 and 4. And as we come to a page, indicate the linkage there. But the challenge that we face, and this is a serious challenge, is that it won't only be on that page. Do you follow? That is the issue. It isn't only on that page. Those of us who participated in the committee last week are fully aware of this challenge. So, in this instance, I merely thought, let's deal with that as we go along and then go back to page 7 again. That's what we're going to do. Because no matter which way we go about it, if we start on page 7, we're going to run across to other pages as well, as and when the issue pops up. We do need to deal with this, and the reason we need to deal with it, these are the issues we've raised ourselves. We've raised them. And we have to deal with them to see what's come out of the working group. So, we've already had an explanation just in this area. I'm going to ask the advocate, which are the other areas that deal with the point being raised under 2 by the working group, which we initially sent there as 4 issues. We sent it there flagging 4 or 5. Advocate, yes. Strike.
Madam Chair, that issue there, number 2, is what is being dealt with on page 11 of our bill. Page 11, 8, capital A. And we find identical provisions in the other 3 acts as well. 15 seconds. What subsection 1 is saying, that let's take for instance the Design Act. We've got now these new amendments in respect of design that will, after this act has been approved by Parliament, will be incorporated into the Design Act. So there will be the old sections and the new sections in the same act. Sub 1 is saying that the new sections will have some relation with the old sections, in the sense that in as much as the old sections can be applied to the new ones, as long as they are not inconsistent with one another, such application will take place. So someone is saying the new sections will to some extent be influenced by the old sections. What subsection 2 is saying is, yes, that is fine, but keep in mind that the new sections will not give anybody the right in respect of anything else than an intellectual property right in respect of indigenous knowledge. So there is a clear limitation. the new sections, if you read them together with the old sections, will not grant to anybody a right other than a right in respect of indigenous knowledge. All four of them are saying identically the same thing.
I'm coming in now, but I've been trying to come in for a while, so forgive me if it's not the appropriate time. I just want to record with a bit of document of the 12 points plus 2, that there were 4 additional points I raised at the meeting before when this document was finalized, which the Honorable Father Merber assured me that we carried forward. It was an aspect of constitutionality, only bill, definition of knowledge attaining in indigenous community and perpetuity. So I just want to, so that you don't think that I will come up with new issues that we raised there, and I will raise them at the adequate and appropriate time.
The right of perpetuity, I notice, is an issue that has been flagged here. I'm sure this has been dealt with, because all of the issues were noted, you know. And Honourable Van der Merwe?
Yeah, Chair, sorry, you will notice that this talks about the committee meeting on the 24th. So these points plus the two, because, for example, the contradictions in Designs Act by Harris have actually been dealt with subsequently. This is an old list. When I said 12 plus 2, it wasn't those two, actually.
Ah.
but there were some other issues that he raised that are already in there.
We have tackled this in some depth now for some time.
that the fresh clauses, as it were, in the redraft actually acknowledges this. Although it doesn't use the word moral, it acknowledges it's implicit in here. Is this what you are saying?
Without saying anything that is superfluous, if we have a look at the actual reading of substance, nothing in the sections contemplated in sub 1. The sections in sub 1 are the new sections to be inserted, the amendments. So nothing in this, in those sections shall be construed as granting any right, very general, is very wide, to any person in respect of intellectual property, this is what we now might find in the existing laws, which is not indigenous knowledge. There's a definition, there's a clear demarcation as to what indigenous knowledge, or if we would like to call it indigenous intellectual property, is. And we, from a drafting perspective, on my humble side, I can't take this one any further, making it clear that they cannot grant any rights save for rights associated with indigenous. So if we do find those moral rights provided for in the current laws, clearly, it's now precluded the way we see it from by this one.
It's very clear. You don't need to use the word moral rights. Really, you know, it's just a thing. Does anyone wish to comment on this? We don't need to take things backwards and forwards. The question would be, really, do we need to specifically insert it, or have we found another way of going about it? That is the real issue here. Does anyone want to comment on Will Mandelova?
My understanding was the points raised, which were reflected in the left-hand column of our various documents, were then dealt with by the drafters, and the, so it was agreed that there was, you know, if you look at yellow, didn't we say yellow meant that there had been agreement amongst those two? So your point is, does Sepo Shabangu agree with this new draft? We must assume that she does, because that is what we've been given to understand, that this covers her concerns. So I think, you know, that we can ask her, but certainly that is what the full day meeting was all about.
I don't want us going backwards and forwards, because if we then become, begin to draft or, you know, process, deliberate on legislation as if we're operating a yo-yo. And that was my own understanding of this. This is why I'm finding it difficult to appreciate the point being made. I really don't appreciate while acknowledging your sentence. You see, that's what I'm saying. Because I can't see the purpose here. It's certainly when we got this document and what we're getting now, it does appear to have addressed it. That's my understanding of what is in front of us, Honourable Harris. And I think you need to give us a clear position as to, I don't know, what is it you can't appreciate here? Perhaps some of us are not appreciating your point, Honourable Harris.
Yeah, I mean, we're making a mountain out of a molehill. I began by asking if we can flag this to raise with Shabangu, find out if she is satisfied with the solution of it. I don't think it's sufficient, but I'd like her view, because the original concern comes from her.
Yeah, but the point is the concern has been dealt with. That's what I'm saying.
I'm not convinced of it. So I don't understand why we can't flag something for the experts to explain to us.
Because they have already raised the point. They've raised it. It's been dealt with.
Well,
are we then going to deal with every point here again, over and over again, when the expert flag raised something, we deal with this, we send it back, it goes backwards and forwards. Do the experts have progress of our work on the Mandelova? Or do they sit in a vacuum somewhere? They send us something, there's a vacuum. Mr. Herman's perhaps should be in a better position to answer this.
Chair, you'll be aware that the IP11 document was a result of a very lengthy and very detailed meeting. It very clearly indicates what work still has to be done in the grey, orange, or whatever it is. So the point is that work then continues to be done by email correspondence. a number of issues that we were waiting for their comments on. Most of them, the only two ones we haven't received yet are point 10 and point 12. Those ones we haven't received yet. All the other matters have been email discussed with them. But Chair, let's ask her when she comes here, so we can just tick it off if it's as I suggested.
Well, perhaps we shouldn't be holding today because the point is, all of these points here deal with issues they've commented on. Now we're going to have to wait till 5 o'clock to hear whether they agree or not. This is just becoming ridiculous, and I think she's coming next week. So is this what we want? Then we need to get your views. Because this is exactly what we're leading into. We're leading into a cul-de-sac on the matter. Honourable Smuller, then Honourable Harris.
Thank you, Chair. I think the question that I would want to ask to our two legal advisors is to say, when a ruling has got to be made in a dispute resolution that reverts out of this section, and you've got to justify what rights will it entail to be able to make that ruling, that mean that you've got to look at the definition, being able to make a ruling, or for someone to make a ruling, or will it be then accepted in that under that rights are because the aspect referred to is a little bit vague. Should one then pinpoint what rights are there in order for people to make a ruling at some point or another, because obviously that could be the case.
We will, of course, be hearing more about disputes, but that's not exactly the question that you posed to us. You're really arguing whether they should be given the advice already here, in effect. And certainly, as far as legislation goes, one wants to put down the principles, and then that's why you leave some leeway for interpretation. Well, not interpretation, the intention should be clear. That's the big thing about law. The intention must be very clearly stated. Dispute mechanisms should be provided for in this particular instance in some legislation, which we have yet to hear what they have to say on the matter. With respect to that, we can clarify that with reference to dispute. All right, just that aspect of angle, if we can put it that way. If it is clear that that could pose problems, we may want to look at it again from that angle. May well also cover the points being made by Honourable Harris. I don't think there's a disagreement about the moral issue at all. The issue is really, is it covered? That is what's at stake here. Is it explicit? Is it covered? Is it included? Without stating the word moral. I think that's really not the issue. I would have thought of the committee itself at this point was in a position to make those decision. If we can't do that, we are going to have to actually get more and more time into commission meetings for the extended meetings. We'll flag the matter accordingly and move to page 12. I hope that was understood, Honourable Harris.
With respect, there's no need to be so confrontational about the way you're running this meeting. We could have moved on 20 minutes ago. I was simply saying Shabangu asked for moral rights to be specifically inserted into the chapters. The drafters have drafted another solution. And all I wanted was to flag when she comes before us, we can see if she's happy with that or not. We really could have done that and not had this argument. It doesn't go any further than that. I don't intend to filibuster on every single point asking the experts their opinion. This was a simple thing that she specifically asked, and I wanted to check with her. I'm finding this very frustrating, Chair, because you're assuming that the opposition is intending to delay this as long as possible by referring everything back to text messages. I can assure you that's not the case as far as I'm concerned.
I'm assuming nothing. Well, actually, I'm assuming nothing. Absolutely nothing. I can hardly assume what I don't know is in your head. So when it comes to assumptions, I am assuming nothing. What we are trying to do is to do the work for which we were elected. We do have a working group that is supposed to required by the committee to go page by page. We are required to do that. But we've got quite a few experts. And as for being confrontational, I don't think you know me very well. If you like to see me confrontational, you'll see that in a committee meeting. That is not the way I do run committees, to be confrontational, but rather to reach a form of consensus as much as possible. Now, let's try to proceed on a constructive basis. What I don't want is every single thing that we've already had on IT11 referred to in detail, what appears to be some forms of agreement, we go down that street again. That's what we don't want. If we have mislabeled and got the wrong colours here, then we do need to look at them. But we've already noted some points on the preamble that Honourable Elvis wants to at least note, and for us not to conclude on that, noted. All right. We've got stage in our position. We're moving on now to page 9. Okay, I just need to clarify that. We were on page 8, if I recall.
Madam Chairman?
Yes. Honourable Anderson.
I need to understand how I can interject, because I've been trying to make myself known for a while. I don't want to take the microphone without your permission. I want to raise a point, but before I raise, I want to go back to your yo-yo analogy. I think that we need to look at one another, determining whether the points we raise are valid and in good faith. If those points are valid and in good faith, I feel they're solved, we need to go back to them. And I promise you, each of us would prefer doing something else rather than raising these things. It's time consuming, requires more. So I raise the tag because we went from the draft to the document, then back to the draft, and we jumped something where I was raising my hand. And I know that it has been discussed. I know that it is in IT11. I know that it has been discussed in the task team at great length. But I just need to flag that in spite of all this, the problem exists. And the problem exists as the following: the legal capacity of indigenous communities. No, I'm on page 7, that's why I'm taking you back, because I was raising my hand on page 7. Indigenous community, the issues that are flagging, legal capacity, geographical basis, which is not in compliance with the criteria in section 235 of the Constitution, and it would not address the communities which do not have a continuous geographical basis, say the Afrikaners, the Italians or the Jews, and legal capacity and geographical base. These two issues. Thank you.
Honourable Ambrosini, having moved from the indigenous body, yes. So you're not taking us back.
Okay.
No, we're still working down here. There's blue here. Blue means, according to what Advocate Quetta said, some very new things as well. I just want to clarify this, Honourable Van der Merwe. Am I correct to understand that the blue you only got yesterday from Advocate Greta? This morning?
Yeah, this morning.
Okay. So that is very new, am I right? You haven't even fully appreciated that. Yes. Honourable Van der Merwe?
It was. The blue is areas where the drafters have seen gaps and where we might have raised gaps in the meeting yesterday. But we haven't seen it written as is, but the drafters were busy with refinement, if I could call it that, of the red section. Now, indigenous communities is one of the areas, the definition of indigenous communities is one of the very controversial areas, and we call it the Cook sister argument because it came from Mr. Harris in that Cook sister argument. It is one of the plus two that I had on my list. It says how we define community was also there. So this is an area that I think we should just ask for the full explanation from the draft once again of how they have crafted it in such a way as to include all the arguments that we've heard so far, include the resolution of all the arguments that we've heard so far.
It will appear as if this particular one here, we can still raise issues. The experts are coming this afternoon, as we've noted, and it has it's been in the working group for some time, one way or the other. It was raised very early. It was raised in the committee last year. Where are we going with this, or do the experts have given an opinion? I think we need to discuss this a little bit before the experts comment first. Honourable.
Yeah, just a thing, could the Honourable Australia Crew explain what he means by the legal capacity of the communities?
Thank you very much. No, we had enormous discussions about this in committee, and I captured in a document, which is one paragraph, so allow me to read what I captured. It is not possible to ascribe any right, obligation, or prerogative to an indigenous community without giving it the relevant legal capacity, which by necessity means giving it legal personality. And the problem doesn't go away by creating a protocol, because somebody needs to sign that protocol. If it is a company resolution, the company needs to exist. Stating that the indigenous community must act through an authorized representative, as we do here, does not solve the problem, as an entity would need to exist to provide the representative with such authorization. There is also the need for legal prescripts to determine how such entity expresses its volition. Inter alia, to appoint a representative or apply for registration of its knowledge or to enter into this protocol. One should rely, and this is my suggestion that I made there, on traditional councils, which are legal entities, and one should require other communities which water the benefit of the deal to be established as a for gain or as a not for gain company under the Companies Act. Otherwise, we cannot know what the community is. We cannot ascribe rights and privileges to the community. We cannot, instead setting aside the concrete problems, any of us, as our chairperson has done to a great extent, who has worked at community level, knows the type of conflicts which emerge when we try to identify that we is opposed to them. And we are passing this legislation because we believe that there is money involved. If there is no money involved, we should not bother. I mean, it's not worth the effort. And if there is money involved, there will be communities of people claiming to be the communities, which other aspects of the community will not recognize them to be communities. So we need to have that legal certainty. And that's the first point. The second point was that on the geographical basis. I hope I've been clear.
So thank you for sharing that with us as well. And that's helpful. I'm just looking at some of the issues that I hear. Some of them we may even want to have copies of them. Sometimes one can listen to something and you don't fully assimilate everything that has been said all at once. So it is pretty helpful to have a few things in writing. I think we would want to discuss this a little bit more before we just shift gear on it. It isn't something that, I mean, it is an important point in Indigenous community. It's been raised by the working group itself on two occasions now, by ourselves as well. And it is something that was flagged when we had other members here. And it's a very difficult thing to perhaps agree on. And it may be that we are charting new territory. When you chart this new territory or pioneer new territory, you are to, you know, find yourself overwhelmed all over the place. But I don't think it means that we should try to do deal with the matter. We do have to deal with it. And how best at this stage can we?
a community to a company, as you say. Yes, our law allows that a community or an individual, for that matter, it allows it, can approach a legal person, a lawyer, who would make representations on behalf of that individual or the community. And I don't know why, and in this particular instance, if at all we were to make any further addition, one would think along those lines rather than saying can a community into a company. Because the danger of doing that is that you run the danger of privatizing indigenous knowledge to a few individuals. And once you form those individuals, form themselves into a company, it will be very difficult to address that. Yet when you allow a situation for where a community would call in a lawyer and say, act on our behalf on this particular matter as an indigenous community, then you are acting within a situation that would not throw that community into a danger of having its indigenous knowledge being privatized as an individual. That's the first point. The second point is that on the geographical area, I think that we are reading the geographical area only. And if we are doing so, then we run a danger of excluding other communities who are spread all over. But when you read further and include the word historical, for instance, you include the word social and cultural, etc. and so forth. Even if you were making an example of an Afrikaner community, as Honorable Ambosini is making, the Afrikaner community has a history of having settled in South Africa. It has practiced its culture throughout the period of its existence here. It is an identifiable social group. And so we can't define the identification of a community simply on the basis of geography only, and fail to read the rest of the other things that are in this definition.
One of the bosses, perhaps taking up holistically, it's not something I do think that we all agree on. It's a very, very difficult concept. And I think the effect here has been to try and address all of the issues that over the last 2 years we have raised them in this committee. You've been with us a long time as administrator, and you've heard me say that we've raised pieces with us, and quite badly as well. How do we address it? But this particular, I thought, redraft here has taken a number of these points into account that in the past eluded us. And I do think that Honorable Ambrosini, I'm going to stop the tea. I'm not going to stop the tea discussion. I hope that perhaps even a tea break, sometimes informal discussion also helps in this regard. So that when we do come back, we come back on page 8, we look at indigenous cultural expression or knowledge. We may have reached a point where at least we can agree to differ. I think there has to come a time when you pioneer something that a certain element of uncertainty is present. whenever something is there for the first time, there's always that until you do have what is being referred to sometimes as the case law. But thank you very much just for the moment. We are going to adjourn for a short break. Some members have taken advantage of the tea break as they should have, but just a 10-minute break, please. limited to phonetic, verbal expressions such as stories, epics, legends, poetry, riddles. Did you have your hand up, Honourable Harris, as I started to read, or when I was reading?
Before you started, Chair.
Right.
If I missed it, I apologise, but can you just quickly update me on what we decided with the definition of Indigenous community?
On the definition, I just didn't see you when I noticed, perhaps like me, you had to just attend to something briefly. What I would like you to do, we haven't agreed on that point. I have asked, I hope, the Honourable Ambrosini already to draft what it is that you would like to see changed. If it was purely and to wait until the experts came, in this case we can do that, but I would much prefer to see what you were proposing in this regard itself. That's what I had indicated to Honourable Ambrosini, and the same would apply to yourself. Meaning, we wouldn't have passed on it, but at least we'd have some sort of draft of what you are proposing. I've done the same to Honourable Albert, who promised to send something forward on the preamble to the table. I know that you are going to be away for a short while, so we wouldn't have passed on that point then. Is that clear? Okay. Honourable, page 8, I was just there. I think the idea is to complete the actual expression before I recognize any hands. Musical or sound expressions such as songs, rhythms, or instrumental music, sounds which are the expression of rituals, or see expressions by actions such as dances, plays, ceremonies, rituals in sacred places, and peregrinations. I'm just wondering who would understand the word peregrinations unless they did English literature. And sports and traditional games, puppet performances and other performances, whether fixed or unfixed, or tangible expressions such as material expressions of art, handicraft, architecture, or tangible spiritual forms for sacred places. Right, now, there's that here. Is everyone happy with that? Is there anything that you want to raise an objection to? Otherwise, we continue and then make a proposal as to what you would like to see put in. Honourable Ambrosini?
Madam Chair, I sent you a document raising 6 points, and I indicated to you that I would try to confine my input to those 6 points. This is one of them. Again, I don't want to take you back, but this is a real issue. And I appreciate the difficulty of this issue. This is built up some difficulties, and this is one of those. Usually, knowledge is defined by novelty and uniqueness. In this specific field, we don't want to do that. But still, we need to identify something that is like that. Because the relevant knowledge which ought to be protected is one which is specific of one community and not the other community. If something is ubiquitous, as much of indigenous knowledge is, something is common to everyone, that must be excluded. I made the example in my document which is extreme, but it's an example, the knowledge of not being under a tree when there is a thunderstorm. That's, everyone knows that. Or there could be certain songs that are so, like the song of carrying the water, which are so ubiquitous throughout the whole of Africa.
Okay.
Now, that's the first thing. The second thing,
facing this, what I would like, Honourable Ambrosini, it's the same thing that has been said to experts, I would hope. Can you please, we've got a proposal here from the drafters, we've got one. Can you come forward and put a proposal forward that tackles the issues that you want to tackle?
Yeah. I will, but may I present, because language, I like to present the concept, and then if there is at least appreciation for the concept, then I will put the language, I will put the legal language
yes,
down.
The problem is we haven't been too long on that, but
I've got one more sentence, and I will finish. So the first one is specific to one community. The second qualification is that must have not been, again, in regular IP you've got public domain, but must have not been so common that even though remain ascribed to the community, all the other communities know about it. I made the example of the Jewish community using the therapeutic method of chicken soup. We know, we all ascribe to the Jewish community, but everyone knows about it. So if these two sentiments are things that the committee wishes to look into as qualifications, and then I will try to capture these two goals, so because they are goals, with actual language as an amendment.
I'm not sure that everyone would be sharing that position of yours. That's why I'm asking if you put something forward. I am just going to check with other members of the committee here, you know, whether or not they are also experiencing a difficulty with the draft that is before us. That is the issue. How many others have a challenge with this draft? This particular one here on page 8, Indigenous Cultural Expression or Knowledge. You see, you are the only one. So what I'd like you to do is to put an alternative forward. And then if we, you know, we'll get that, I'm sure, at 5 o'clock or whenever. But, or even perhaps after lunch. Indigenous performance means a literary, artistic, or musical work which with an indigenous or traditional origin, including traditional performances or indigenous cultural expressions, which was created by persons who are or were members currently or historically of an indigenous community, and which literary, artistic, or musical work is regarded as part of the heritage of that community. That's another issue that was redrafted for our benefit. Page 9, still keeping a weather eye on what is here also on from the working group, that if we've had that before, why are we not going over it? We've already been over what is black, and I must, for the members who don't come regularly, I just want to re-emphasize that we have been there. G. National Trust means the National Trust for Indigenous Knowledge. Performance. Page 10. H. I. J. By the addition of subsection 1 after the definition of reproduction of the following definition. Traditional performance includes an indigenous performance and a derivative indigenous performance. Sorry, I was just switching my phone off there as well. K. We've dealt with K. Page 11. We've already dealt with that. Nothing in section contemplated in subsection 1 shall be construed as granting any rights to any persons in respect of intellectual property which is not indigenous knowledge or derived from indigenous knowledge. We went down there and we tackled that at length. Right, and we're also made aware that that is related to other points in the bill itself, other clauses. Page 12, there's a blue line here, which means we should be on full alert under 8B2. No right in a derivative performance
provided for in the Intellectual Property Laws Amendment Act 2010 shall therefore be eligible for registration unless the addition thereof a derivative performance. Under 3, the rights created by this Act shall in no way restrict or affect the rights provided for by any other law relating to rights of performance in traditional work. The rights of performance referred to again, related to clarity, page 13. A. The performance is a derivative indigenous performance. It was created on or after the date of commencement of the Intellectual Property Laws Amendment Act 2010, and the community from which the work or substantial part thereof originated is or was an indigenous community when the work was created, or B, a performance is an indigenous performance. The issue of the national database. The database has come up on here. I noticed it's one of the issues. Also, I note, Honorable Van der Merwe, the whole issue about hereditary, derivative, etc. had come up earlier, and we've tackled some of these derivatives already that we insisted on being taken into account. What about the database that is referred to there on your point 7?
The point that was raised here was a query that we had originally and which the drafters and the experts discussed together. And we believe that the red, well, I believe, I don't know if you believe anything anymore, but I believe that the red bits now take care of those queries that were raised, because it's related to the four different acts and the fact that we needed to identify, and this was made clear by the DPI, that under trademarks and design, because remember this is one of these replicated bits, it's about the database. We were very confused about the database and whether it was going to be a whole new standalone thing and what were the costs and so on. But it appears that the registration, which is necessary under trademarks and design, is now going to be a subsection of existing databases. And that that this will be taken care of through in this case the insertion here under performance protection and copyright, and then as the sub register under trademarks and design. So we believe that this matter has been canvassed fully with the experts and resolved fully between the experts. In fact, our queries have been resolved through that engagement between the experts and the drafters in the presence of the DPR, who gave that further information.
Right. I think that we have that explanation, Honourable Harris.
Thanks. That's one part of it when it comes to this section, and I tend to agree with Honourable Fanamaba. The other aspect perhaps we're coming to is listed under number 8 on her list, community forming a trust and setting up a protocol. And I believe my earlier question when I brought this up under definitions was bumped across to here. Because you'll see, Chair, that 8C3 is the detail on the community protocol. Now that we've come to it, I request again that opinion from the drafters on the merits of a protocol versus a court.
I think that's on page
20.
You'll agree with that. Am I correct there?
Yeah.
performer or group of performers, person, juristic person authorized to act on behalf of an indigenous community, etc. This particular clause AB to the bottom of page 13. Okay. We then talk about that the necessary changes apply before moving over to page 14.3, which is the one that you have raised already. And I think there is some agreement to wait just for the experts. Was that correct while I was sneezing? Was that the request you were making?
It wasn't what I requested. It's not a bad idea, Chair, but in the interim, can I request that the drafters provide their view on protocol versus the corporate?
I didn't hear you clearly. I'm sorry, it was myself. My fault. Over to the drafters, please.
Madam Chair, I hope I can speak on our behalf collectively. Maybe at the outset I might not be the right person to say this, but let me say it in any event. By the by, for what it's worth, we all know that the foundation of our law is to be found in so-called Roman Dutch law, and then with the English influence thereafter. But in this country of ours, it is not that simple. And I'm saying this in all sincerity and with the greatest of respect. In our country, there is something like customary law. Not only customary law, but also customary use and expression. And a kind of a way of living in general within those parameters. And I cannot say anything that is descriptive to this committee. But in discussing this very issue, we should be guided along those lines. What we are saying in essence here is, yes, according to our legal system that we inherited historically, we have these very clear principles as they relate to juristic persons and the rest. But we cannot make it that simple in this. We must show, and I'm again speaking with great sincerity, I simply despise hypocrisy. We must be sympathetic and sensitive to how these indigenous communities of ours have been conducting themselves over the years within those customary parameters. In drafting these changes to the bill, this is not really. Mr. Ambrosini, the Honourable Mr. Ambrosini, is quite correct in setting out the, almost like clinically, the legal principles, which we fully appreciate. But we are saying that we need to go beyond that in this specific instance. It is not for me, or possibly for anybody else, to tell an indigenous community that for purposes of enjoying the protection that's provided or that Parliament has deemed fit to provide to your community in terms of this new law, unfortunately we will, or Parliament will compel you to, I don't know what this might be, Parliament will compel you to form a juristic structure in the strict legal technical sense of the word. And please allow me just to latch on to an example that we gave at the previous time around when we discussed this. It's not necessary to repeat again that these indigenous communities, once again, some others could testify better than I did, but I do know enough to say that they are in fact very well structured, irrespective of them not necessarily conforming with strict juristic person status. And because that is so, we must try to act accordingly. And if an indigenous community having a traditional council, having a traditional leader, would through that council empower or give a mandate, almost like a power of attorney, to the traditional leader, and saying that we've decided, we have taken a stance, will you please approach Mr. Netsitende and them there at the registrar and seek registration of our indigenous intellectual property right. The leader would do so based on that protocol, and then we must read these provisions in, on page 4 very clearly, because they all relate to that protocol. What must be in there? For instance, how that specific community is structured, how they go about in making decisions and mandates. All of that must be in there. And then that person seeks registration from the registrar. The application is refused on the basis that intellectual property rights, generally speaking, can only be conferred on either natural or juristic persons. And the registrar tells the person there that this right relates to the indigenous community, not to you as a person, irrespective of this protocol, therefore your application is dismissed. Then I say without fear of much hesitation, if that indigenous community would immediately approach a court of law on the basis of review and seek for that, or seek from the court to direct or mandate the to make the necessary registration in the register, they will in all probability, Mr. Netsitende was saying not 90% but 100% certain, that the court will direct the registrar to make the registration in the register. And allow me just to read this. This is two. It's fairly brief. Section 235 on self-determination. The right of the South African people as a whole to self-determination, as manifested in this constitution, does not preclude within the framework of this right recognition of the right of recognition of the right of self-determination of any community sharing a common cultural and language heritage. Based on this, we say we hear and we respect what Mr. Ambrosini is saying. And as a humble lawyer, I cannot find many problems, Mr. Ambrosini, with what you're saying. But what I am saying that in this specific instance, particularly based on this, which we must be guided by, the committee must please consider not to compel the communities to form those touristic persons, respect their current structures, and allow them to enjoy this protection without being prescriptive to them as to touristic persons. I've said this a couple of times, Madam Chair, for your sake and mine. I hope that it might not be necessary. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much indeed. We do appreciate that.
I just want to refer the committee to some of the public hearings we had when we were in the Eastern Cape, when we met with the chiefs and the representatives of the judiciary. I think there was a strong emphasis from those people that we as parliament must recognize those structures that exist, and that in whatever we're doing, they agree with us what we're doing, they accept, they think that it's long overdue, but we must recognize that. I really think that we should accept this, because we cannot undermine those structures, because they've been there even long before we were there. I think we needed something that is going to accommodate them so that they can see themselves as part of that. Maybe a week ago, what we also said was that we need to recognize that sometimes there's conflict among them. We even accommodated that, so that should be. Therefore, I think we as the legislators, we cannot ignore that. And I think I would accept the definition by the legislators.
I think the opposite position is in 8C sub 2B, where it says the person or juristic person authorized to act on behalf of the indigenous community. That authorization comes from the protocol. And that is what we say. I don't know how a cooperative would fit into this thing, because a protocol is a conferring of authority, in a sense, by the community on a person or juristic person, but in this case on a person. So I think that it's been quite neatly dealt with in this addition, and I think that it was an idea that came from Braun, Professor von Braun. And I think that it's been captured rather elegantly, in my own view, in the way in which we have now structured this thing in order to account for the nature of indigenous communities so often, and authority given to the correct person on the other side. So I would like to also say that I think we should support this clause.
Move to also on page Honourable Elvis, then Honourable Elvis.
Yes, thank you, Chair. Actually, I just want to ask a question to the drafting team. Because as per the explanation and from looking at the draft board, it seems to me that juristic personality is implied. Not directly imposed, but it's implied. And an actual fact was happening in the customary law. Customary law's protections are extended beyond customary law into other communities that did not partake in customary law from an African base. So that would, to my mind, sort of resolve the problem if we can make that inference without stating it explicitly. Perhaps Mr. Ambrosini will add something more which I haven't seen, but I would just like to ask the drafting team whether that is to their mind, if that makes sense to them.
And I think the section also that I put straight on referred to, the right to self-determination of a community, actually indicates to us that according to the Constitution, a community can hold a right. And as such, whether we call it juristic might not be the right term, because there's no company being registered or corporation being registered. But there's certainly something there. I think we can have it equated to a firm. In business, you have something called a firm, which can be a couple of companies, there can be a couple of people coming together, there can be one person. You don't have to register it, but it's acknowledged, and it can actually sue, it can be sued, etc. So I think that is definitely what you're saying. The community, to an extent, is something. We might not be able to put a name to it, but there is something acknowledged there, and they, the group, can come together and appoint a representative.
It seems as if we're getting there, Honourable Ambrosini.
in a disagreement with the spirit with which you raise it, but perhaps with a conclusion. And the point he makes, we must be sensitive and understand how these communities operate. Now, I've had the privilege of being involved in traditional communities for 20 years. I was the advisor of the traditional communities from the World Trade Center to a entire coalition of traditional leaders. So my traditional leadership credentials, I think, can be accepted. And I don't see, on the one hand, the difficulty for an indigenous community being a traditional community as contemplated by law. And on the other hand, I see enormous conflicts if it isn't. It will undermine traditional leadership. It will split communities. It will not have a mechanism for resolving it. Again, if I look at the Zulu society in which I am more familiar, there are songs which emanate within the area of an Induna. And the next Induna has got a different song. And dealing with those type of issues outside the unifying framework of traditional leadership and outside the mechanism of dispute resolution that traditional leadership offers is a formula to engender greater and greater divisions and conflicts. I just finalized a draft amendment which I will be emailing to you momentarily. So if you can all just take a look at this and see the extent to which you may solve this problem, and it could be a way forward.
Well, look, it seems that there is a general sort of consensus, though we have heard, as you add, Honourable Andrew, he would like to send this forward to us. Please do so to the committee secretary in this regard. Yes, can you have that story, Honourable Law?
Chair, what I agree with the first part of what Brother Broccini is speaking. The second part of it does not take into cognizance that this committee and the law we are busy with impact on everybody in South Africa and not the Zulu community.
Yes.
No.
I
said
in a way it's more in the way of an illustration than okay. Thank you for the point. Page 14. And we have a blue point here under protocol. The protocol must be kept with a recording of the performance right. I just wanted to clarify something. Except on that point, I have seen the word peregrination, and I know it was just on eight when these things took a little backwards. And I hope that somebody has just given up. I'm sure if I asked everyone except possibly two or three people in the room, they would struggle to tell me what it meant. But having heard about who the peregrinators are, what does it mean, please? Thank you, any one of the advocates today.
This is not a question that I would have liked to feel that I'm the last one to defend this word. It's a derivative, this word. It is being derived, and foreign is the same. From the Latin word peregrinus, which is foreign. So I cannot defend this word by any.
And that is why when I see these foreign words still in our South African legislation, I do get alarmed. We said we want to make all our legislation accessible. And the issue to me is that exactly why don't we say what we mean? Is there any reason that will detract from the law that would not allow us to use plain English?
None, Jefferson. But I can look further on this phrase.
I'm assuming not everyone studied Latin. I had the opportunity to do so, but not everyone did. Right. I'm not the advocate Vandermeer, but I am recognizing that the advocate Vandermeer.
I think you look in a dictionary. The meaning is a
journey, especially a long or meandering one. So we can maybe look for a word that is a little bit more accessible and easier. I think what is meant here is simply where rituals are held in a sacred place that is static, and where the ritual might be held in a place that moves about. So we can look for a better word.
South African world. Thanks. Well, you know, I think our language has been quite useful. I mean, but peregrination, I don't want us taking rules through that requires a Latin dictionary. Yes? Get yourself on the way.
I expect that sounds something that should be created, not, you know, not to be done around children, but the peregrination. But what we are importing in all this definition, the anthropological language, and what I think we are looking at here is the memory that comes from the journey. It's almost a Joseph Campbell mythological aspect. If you go from one place to the other, transformation takes place, and within culture, there is the notion of the peregrination as the tool of the transformation. A typical example within our culture is the Jews for 40 days in the desert, and they enter the covenant of the Dead Sea. But it's a bigger.
Just
so
before I think there are many examples in our own South African history, going from the, you know, what do they call it, the Defrakani, and all of these purely African history, which capture the same point of peregrination, which is perhaps can be taken back to biblical expressions. Page 4. But I think you agree, you know, look, a little levity here and then is also quite helpful in the committee that is this in the wording. Page 4, the protocol, we were there, and I just raised that because it happened to be blue. Any person or entity referred to in subsection 2, we've already dealt with that in something earlier, page 15. The nature of rights of performers in traditional performances. And we're now moving in, it says, the provisions of the section 28E Copyright Act. The term of protection, the prohibition against the use of a performance as provided for in these respective sections of a derivative indigenous performance. We've already had the definition of the date, etc., and all of this relates to that, and it was in our request that we asked for a, you know, a clarification here, and hence we also got a definition and the insertion thereof, which does, I'm sure, address the concern that was raised last week or the week before. Page 16, though, the issue of royalties has been coming up. This may well address that issue yet again. 8G. And you're fortunately right here with us, Advocate Quetta, restriction on use of traditional performances and royalties. 8G2, any person who has acquired rights as contemplated in the IP Laws Amendment Act 2010 before the commencement of this Act must comply with 8B2, B and C within 6 months after the commencement of this Act. Any person for who has acquired rights as contemplated in the Intellectual Law, Property Laws Amendment Act, etc., after commencement of this Act must comply with Section 8B2. Perhaps we can just a hand. Oh, sorry, on the wrong end of the
room. Now, I think we have got a gremlin here. I can't believe it. But it's 2, 4, 5. So it should be 3, huh? Okay. I just also want to say that this is like the transitional provisions that we've talked about, and there was some issue that was corrected, which is why it's blue, because the clause 2 refers actually to
those persons getting the right before and the other ones after. So I think that that does cover what we were raising yesterday. But it's just the numbering that I wanted to correct.
So where is 3 were you saying with the river?
It says 8G and then sub 1, sub 2, and then it goes straight to sub 4, and it should be 3. Well, if it's obviously it's consequential after that,
there is no 4.
So the 4 is coming next.
The 5 is coming 4.
Yes, but where is it up there?
4 is 5.
Oh, all of it is incorrectly up. All of it. Okay, the whole lot. The page 16, page 17. I'm just trying to recall the issues here that gave us the red in the first place that were addressed. Hold up the form was right, the derivative indigenous community, form was right, etc., etc. Just give me a minute while I get my previous one. Page 17, page 18. Right. That was all pretty clean, but perhaps there was something relating to something else. I haven't made any notes on my earlier one. I was looking in particular at the G here on page 18 as the new clause of it. Page 18, the G there, 10G. On Romana Miller?
Yeah, if you recall, this is just about archiving. If you're going to use it for archiving, then that's been included as an exception to. As with the professional criticism and the educational and scientific issue. So that, I think that's what that is trying to cover there.
Fine, thank you very much. Well, I think there is a new source of the National Trust Fund. National Trust Fund. Yeah, Honourable Smaller, which one does this relate to?
No, I want to talk on the one that you're on now.
Right, National Trust Fund.
Just for a principle confirmation, and maybe it will be dealt with in the regulations when we deal with this, or when the minister does this regulation. This National Trust Fund doesn't refer to any audit process that has got to take place. Does it automatically fall within our PFMA, or will it be taken up? I just would like to understand if there are some sort of checks and balances in this trust fund being done. Will be dealt with. Thank you.
Right, we can pick me up. I didn't notice any concerns raised earlier. That's what I'm looking at. Yes, the Advocate Van der Merwe.
Thank you, Chair. This is actually number 11 and regarding the sustainability of the trust and the setup of the trust. The question that was, or rather the issue that came up was that DTI will have to confirm to this committee, not necessarily in respect of the approval of this bill, but it becomes an oversight issue in that the trust must be set up in terms of the Trust Act. DTI referred it to the National Lotteries Act to flesh out the section of it, but that act simply also just provides for a trust to be set up. It doesn't give any other aspect. But that simply means then that the Trust Act is applicable. So all those issues there will be applicable, and then because this trust falls under the council, these make automatically applicable.
Okay, thank you.
make that point, and I think we should ask DTI now to either give us a verbal explanation now of the sort of questions that have been asked around this, or to provide us with a one-pager about the intention of the setup, its sustainability, and how, because we will be particularly ability to oversee the proper functioning of the trust, you know. And perhaps I think it is for them to explain to us or to assure us that that all the legal matters and the sustainability issues have been considered by the DTI.
And this concerns the structure as well, so it doesn't just say one point out more to the chair. Or not. In another area, okay.
No.
I'm just asking because that's what I know for the sustainability of trust and structure.
There's another area.
All right, thank you. I'd also like, was this related to this thing? No. Right, so we'll just have this dealt with then, and then come back to yourself. DTI?
Nothing. In response, we are saying we will provide something to detail in writing, but the principle is that a trust should be formed in terms of the trust. And then, during the earlier discussion, we also talked about sustainability, to say it seems not to be a problem from our side to provide, say, an advance fund, money for it. The governance issue of that trust, the minister should issue the appointed trustees in terms of the trust issue, the issue of the lottery, which we expect to also, it has got some guidelines, but we'll put it in writing to the portfolio committee.
Fine, thank you very much. It seems we have to await for that. Honourable Salah. Okay. We're on page 19 then. And we come to the bottom of the page here, but again, I think we have already, I've got a note that we've dealt with that to some degree. Well, perhaps that was Advocate Quetta who was dealing with that at the time, and I need to give you the opportunity.
Chair, you did ask me earlier to just cross-reference us to the 12 issues, so I just want to raise the one more, which we need to wait for the experts on, is that we need to get this committee needs to hear exactly how the royalty issues work. And that is consistent through the four acts as well. And that takes place in this kind of area where we've been working now, so we should just flag it for when experts arrive for them to give us. We're not really contesting what the words say, but we just need as a committee to understand how it will work out, how it will unfold.
And that, in fact,
then
you're referring to pages 19 and 20. No, I was referring to 19 for the earlier pages. Right, okay. I hope everyone is clear about that, 16, 17, 18. This will also await the expert's commentary or explanation in this regard. Honourable Smaller?
Chair, yes, I do note that the disputes on page 19 is one of the 12 points that have been taken on. And I did raise earlier concerning when the disputes actually talks about the rights and what those rights should be. On page 20, it says that the minister shall prescribe certain processes and stuff. I would want to think that those rights will maybe be captured maybe under the regulations or some sort, that it will be there just for me to understand it.
And secondly is also, while this dispute plays, and it also talks to certain Honourable Stupan about it, also, I also want to refer to that because it's a rollover to the other, towards the other sections. It is, what happens in the case of, and maybe Dicky, I must let Colette go around this, is while the dispute process is in place, or I did not compile, I was not part of the 6 months period, window period to inform the commission, no matter what those things are. If there's economic beneficiation by a individual or a company, and that dispute goes actually on, what security or assurity will this Act give, or regulations should give, that one, in that period, that it actually does go back into the beneficiation of that company, so that I don't, might just say, misspend some of the profits that I've been making, you know, since in that negotiation process or within a dispute process, and there's a dispute process and I'm busy compiling a business or performance and I'm deriving some sort of a financial beneficiation. I'm trying to understand, do I need to give some sort of a surety if I'm that person, or will I wait for the appeal process and no matter what has gone on, what then? Does that all go, will they take that up in the regulations so that it's just clearer for that body to say, listen, we've got to suspend your account, or we've got to froze your account or some sort until this thing is done? I'm just putting a needle in a haystack here.
The advisors, you know, advocates for listening here, would be able to just clarify that, make it a little bit clearer. Advocate Van der Merwe.
Thank you, Chair. First of all, in the second of line, whoever adjudicates a dispute will have to look at this Act and any documents flowing from this Act. So we include the Act, we include regulations, we include guidelines as well. We've also provided that they must take into account any customary dispute resolution mechanism. So whatever happens in that dispute resolution mechanism must also be taken into account. So if that dispute mechanism takes into account other types of rights, that will also come into play. So that almost happens automatically. In respect of what happens during the dispute, we try to create here a very simplistic dispute resolution mechanism, simply for the purposes of keeping costs down. So the moment you start freezing accounts, things like that, you start speaking about financial impact, which might in the outcome have a different kind of impact. So what would happen is when your adjudicator looks at all the facts, he or she will consider by the time that a decision is made, if the decision, for instance, is where there was an economic impact, the example I would think of is someone is using a derivative indigenous work and is deriving some kind of income from that and is refusing to pay a royalty. Now, in that period where the dispute resolution is ongoing, there will be income. Your adjudicator will take into account what has happened and will, in fact, from the date that the dispute is lodged, be able to make the order to go back up to that date. That would be your application of general litigation principles, which would be applicable here. So although it's not a specific measure, it is something that can be considered and can be inserted, but it just makes it a little bit more complicated, and you start, might add to the cost of the whole thing, whereas your adjudicator will definitely be able to resolve.
Look, it's acceptable. I just would like to, I've got the understanding that someone is looking at it and it's taking in kind of, you know, all those few factors. Thank you.
Yeah, I was going to say, this was one of the flag issues, which, if you recall, we have not heard from back from the we asked them about alternative dispute resolution mechanism, to apply their minds to that. So we're still waiting for that input from them.
Yeah, I do know we flagged it here, we're coming back to it this afternoon. We're not getting into the substantive issues here. On page 20 then, we, I think we were just there at the top of the page. Honourable Smiler?
Yes, thank you, Chair. I just would like to understand, because I do understand that after every dispute there could be an appeal process, and I do understand that our courts do allow for an appeal process to happen. Is it necessary in this case to refer to those sections, you know, of the appeal process, or is it not? I just needed to understand that it is here, because it says that it is final and stuff, you know, once the commission has made up its ruling. And I just would like to understand if one should want to appeal that body.
So you're basically after the dispute resolution, is there an appeal? That's the question. Yes, advocate Quetta.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would like to refer you to subclause 2 of clause 8J. It states, in effect, J states that he does allow the Chair to go to a court of law or arbitration after this particular institution has adjudicated on the matter and finalized the Chair. So subclause 2 does allow Chair, the person, to go to court. But the only limit is that chair, you don't go to court outside the chair. The first step will be this internal procedure, this procedure chair, that this resolution process must be conducted by an institution. And only the chair has a right to judicial review any of that chair of a decision by the institution in terms of the promotion of administrative justice act chair and also the constitution.
So we're quite clear about that.
And Title 4 also enhances this process, that is, that on page 20, Title 4, that a decision shall be final and constitute an administrative decision. An administrative decision, Chair, is defined by the promotion of the Administrative Justice Act, Chair. It also contains the Constitution, Chair. It is reviewable by court of law.
I don't know how to get myself recognized by you. Rest that your secretary could point that when I raise my hand.
I know that
we don't try to keep you from up here. May I? Been waving passionately from here. May I continue? Thanks. I have 2 concerns, one on 18 and one on 19, and I will only state that. In respect of 18, raised with 28I, I'm still awaiting for a legal opinion which satisfies me, because I think it's satisfying anyone else who can share the concern that this is not a money bill. So I'm afraid that what is provided there.
What document are you looking at?
Page 18. The fund and the prescription for fees in 18, so I'm raising it here.
But you said 8I,
no,
page 18.
Page 18, and which makes reference to 28I. So I'm raising it here because it pops on my radar here first. That it's a point I've made in many venues, and if somebody can put me out of my misery and give me a legal opinion, then I will shut up. Then the second point, on 8J. May I proceed?
Yes.
On 8J or 19. And I accept that this is a matter of nuances and how far one can push it. But there was a debate when there was when the Labour Relations Act established the commissions on mediation and arbitration, which excluded the jurisdiction of a court. And as I remember the argument, the de facto must of
constitutionality, because one did not have to wait for a ruling. And the very simple fact that one had gone through the exercise, and it was tested, it was attested that the conciliation could not take place, was sufficient to move into a jurisdiction. Here we are taking one step further. We are establishing an administrative body which must adjudicate a dispute. And until it provides a ruling, your constitutional right to go to court for the protection of your rights is impaired. With that is, we are moving the way beyond what the Labor Relations Act did, and I think that the issues of constitutionality should be looked upon very carefully. And also in respect of sub-3, which limits, excludes.
Section 3,
which excludes the right to counsel, if you are in a situation where rights are being adjudicated upon rather than a conciliation proceedings under the Labor Relations Act, I think that it becomes very difficult, because you've got an adjudication process and a ruling, it becomes very difficult to justify constitutionally the exclusion of the constitutional right to counsel.
Input there. I was just trying to hop from two pages on which we already heard something. Yes, Honourable Mandela.
Chair, with respect, we have, I will now address the matter of the money bill.
Yes.
We have heard this argument, and I believe that we received an explanation from the legal advisers, and I think we should hear that again. But I also think we should point out that this bill has been through the parliamentary process of tagging, which has declared it to be not a money bill, but section what 75 was it?
Yes.
So I think we should just hear the argument again from the advocates, because I can't remember all the detail of it, and then deal with the money bill aspect of it. I can't comment on the other part of it.
The point I'm making, looking at previous documents we've got here, has been tackled in that way, but.
Taking, and they gave us guidance on how to check the PHA. Now, Chair, the main principle that was put out there was that a bill will be checked in the Section 76 or 375G, 76 or 375, if its provisions in substantial measure fall within a certain category of the schedule, whether Schedule 5 or Schedule 6 of the Constitution. Now, Chair, even if this particular bill, there are issues of imposing a duty or ensuring a person pays some levy or fee, Chair, it must be in a substantial measure. The provisions of this bill, Chair, are talking about appropriation of public money or direct charges to a national authority. Chair, in my view, this is not a money bill. When you look carefully at all the provisions for this bill, we are still of the view that this is not a money bill, Chair. Thank you very much. And the issue of the issue of legal representation, Chair, yes, everyone has a duty to and provided the right to legal representation, Chair. But you will note that the rights contained in the Bill of Rights in the Constitution are subject to limitations, Chair. This particular clause, Chair, is not saying that the person is absolutely not allowed to have legal representation, Chair. This is only limiting it, Chair, because this is not a court of law that is emphasized here. It is a tribunal where in adjudication process will be conducted. It's not a court of law, so therefore, Chair, the test cannot be really so tough or so strong, Chair, so that legal representation can be allowed, Chair. In any event, Chair, it is allowed. It's just that both parties should agree, Chair, to legal representation. Then you should, I think, agree and have something.
Just on the two issues, the one is it's legal representation, the other one is the access to court. First of all, we must just be very careful. It is arrested, detained, or accused persons who have a right to legal representation in terms of the Constitution. I'm not saying that people don't have a right to represent. That is a general legal principle. What we are doing here is we are limiting costs. There's precedent for this. Small claims court work on the same basis. No legal representation is allowed. What we've done here is we've even added that where this is a complex matter, because we've acknowledged that it could be complex, the adjudicator can say there must be legal representation. So it's simply to level the playing field that this was brought in. Secondly, the court issue. First of all, we must remember that the Constitution says access to court is everyone has the right to have a dispute that can be resolved by application of law decided in a fair public hearing before a court or, where appropriate, another independent and impartial tribunal or forum. So just keep that in mind. However, we are not excluding courts. What we are saying here is there's an internal agreement, an internal arrangement. Rules of court and many case laws have put out that where you have not exhausted your internal remedy, the court does not have jurisdiction. It is a simple, absolute Christ law principle. And that is simply what we are stating here to make sure that it's clear that there's an internal process that must be followed first. Once that is followed, then the courts will resume the normal jurisdiction, which is a normal legal practice.
Right, now I'm going to move on from here, but I did see that your hand was up, Honourable Ambrosini. We're not going to go on and on here because you've already asked and requested something in writing in this regard. You've already made that request, all right? So I do want to move on to the last one.
So what to do something in writing?
You've made the request already.
Chair, I request all sorts of things I don't get, but let you request them. So is my request supported by you?
I think that's a bit tight. I've already sent you
that. Thank you very much.
Now, I don't intend to be interrogated from
the court. I misunderstood. I apologize.
I think you must now just listen to what I'm saying, please. But
again, just get just something briefly in writing in this regard so that it can be distributed. I want to move, please, from page 19 and 20. That's where one was, page 20. And to move on to page 21. Multinational agreements, etc., etc. Now, I say that because we got the reference. I just want to look here, and of course, on Orlando Mowbray, you have promised to alert me whenever some of these core issues pop up. Am I correct there? Is that another one? Or?
Chair, this was an issue that was raised some time ago through various processes, and we were waiting for the response from the expert, which we got this morning, and as far as I'm concerned, it kind of settles the matter, but there's clearly you've ruled that people have the opportunity to read that judgment, and then I guess we will be coming back to it in our next deliberation.
Alright, so we are going to just proceed at the moment, grading that one. Do we all accept that? Okay, page 21. Page 22, regulations and guidelines. Once again, we're talking about the institution of dispute resolution proceedings. And I think we've already commented there and indicated they are for coming back to us in this regard. Are we noting that again? Right, just on that one. Page 23. Page 23. We've got a section here dealing with the section of the copyright, etc. It's hereby amended by the addition of... Yes, of all those and other.
Chair, before you move off the Performance Protection Act, I think it is here where we must say that the committee, the working group section of the committee, have requested that we have a discussion about the question of whether it is necessary to amend the Performance Protection Act at all, and whether we cannot simply use the Copyright Act in its amended form, or the amendments to the Copyright Act, to give the protection that we are seeking. Now, the committee, the working group has not resolved on this matter. But we did ask the DTI to provide us with some examples because some members of the little working group, which includes officials, had put forward a case for retaining the section, and other members of the working group had not seen the necessity to retain the section on the performance protection rights. Now, for the record, that if we should decide that for the record, there is so much that is common amongst the amendments to all four acts that should we decide otherwise, we could simply delete that section because it's carried forward in the other sections for amendments to the principal act of copyright, trademarks, and design. So what we need to hear and decide in this committee is the argument for and against the inclusion of the amendments to the performance right. What I Performance Protection Act. What I did ask the DTI to provide us was examples of where this is the only way in which a performance where an indigenous performance can be protected. So that is what I'm hoping we'll get. Now, Chair, you may rule, and it may be seen it is 1 o'clock already, you may rule that we should wait for the advisors as well to be here, to be part of that discussion, the experts, I mean. But I just thought at this point, before we start on copyright, we should raise that question.
You did. What I would like to have seen is that all your working group would be here when we do reflect on that particular matter, seeing as it's quite a serious one, you know, when we call for that. And that this may be the opportunity simply to call for the half an hour lunch break.
greet it. We want to do as much as we can in daylight hours before going on into the evening. So it's now just on 1:10. If we were able to get back to just say 1:25, we could continue until 2:30, you know, for a good hour. But on this particular matter, on the romantic, on this issue, I do think, rather than saying, well, we'll ask the advisors, the experts back, let's get them for when the experts find that particular matter. I don't think it detracts from the substance of what we would go through at the moment tonight. But I think it's useful to have that on the table, because those who are members of the working group, having studied the Act, would have already realized it may well be unnecessary. But of course, that's not for you to make that particular decision, but the whole committee instructs and to find sound reasons for to agreeing to have it, as it were, deleted, not that it wouldn't be essential to providing for its protection, per se. In other acts that are there, the rest of the legislation, is that not correct? The other pieces of legislation would cover certain pertinent aspects thereof. So it's only on that basis, and they'll end up going backwards again when the experts come on the matter, but that's the only reason. So we are going to have a short lunch.